Anarchopreneur, episode number 51, how to turn big heroes into big spenders. All right, here we go.
Government is inefficient and should be dissolved.
What government should actually do is just leave people alone to buy and sell freely among themselves. If they just leave self-interested traders to compete with one another, markets are guided to positive outcomes as if by an invisible hand.
It's free markets that are moral because you only succeed if you meet the needs and wants of other people.
One of the hard things for people to understand is that the more you try to control an economy, the more quickly it falls apart.
Capitalism. God's way of determining who is smart and who is poor.
What is up, Free Market Squad and the place to be? Thank you for taking an hour out of your day to hang with me. I am your host with the Hero Complex, the High Priest of Propaganda, Nathan Fraser. This is the Nathan Fraser Show. You, more importantly, you are a member of the Free Market Squad, and I just want to say thank you for letting me all up in your ear holes today. Before we jump into the show, I want to give a quick shout out to all of the networks that make this unprogramming possible. First of all, truthfrequencyradio.com, Chris and Cherie over there at Truth Frequency, thank you for giving me a platform. UCY.tv, thank you for picking up and simulcasting the shows over on your network. And of course, LRN.fm, much love to everybody over there for making this programming, unprogramming rebroadcast and possible on their network as well. I really do appreciate everybody that helps spread the word about this show. And if you're one of the listeners that has been sharing the show on social media lately, we've been getting a lot more downloads. And every time I see like an uptick in downloads, I also see an uptick on Facebook and Twitter shares. So if you're one of the people out there doing that, much love. It is appreciated. I really appreciate it. So thank you for doing that and keep up the good work. If you want more of this type of unprogramming, go to NathanFraserShow.com. Of course, if you're a brand new listener, you have no idea what this show is all about. So I'm just going to jump into it. This week, I'm going to be talking about psychological things that make people tick, why people do the things that they do, what motivates them to do the things that they do, and how as political activists and as business people, we can have a better understanding as to what makes the world go round with all of the people and their different motives. It's going to be a deep show this week. We're going to explore this both from a political point of view and also from a marketing point of view. So towards the end of the show, some very powerful information that could be, if in the wrong hands, used very maliciously. So listen at your own risk. This is some Church of the Invisible Hand stuff in this episode. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and jump into segment number one. This week's Live Free FM Focus on Freedom. I went from rapping about chemtrails and get more bait to rapping about how business owners can get more pay. Before these status fools, we need tools to defeat them. Live Free FM Focus on Freedom. All right, so this week I was watching on YouTube, I was watching a video of a cat named Ben Shapiro. I don't know if I'd consider him alt-right, but he's one of these guys that goes to like campuses and kind of pushes free speech. He's also a frequent guest on like Fox News and some of these other right, but I really don't know if it's fair to classify him as alt-right, but he kind of gets lumped into that whole alt-right group of people. And anyways, that's completely beside the point. The point of this was that I was watching this video and he's up in front of a large group of college kids and he's trying to speak, and a bunch of social justice warriors from the crowd make their way up to the front in front of the stage and they all like lock arms together and they start like shouting stuff over him, trying to disrupt the entire event that was going on. And he tries to engage in discourse with one of the protesters. And he's like, look, I'm here to talk. I'm here to listen. If you want to have a proper, you know, debate, we can have that. But just standing here and shouting over me is not the way to have a proper debate. And the kid says something very telling. He tells Ben The reason why he's standing against what Ben is doing is because this is how it starts. Quote unquote, the words that came out of his mouth were, this is how it starts. And a very doom and gloom type of sentiment. And Ben kind of laughs. He's like, this is how what starts. But it really got me thinking about how black and white the world is viewed by most people and the world is portrayed by most people. And almost everybody sees the world or sees themselves, their place in the world. They see themselves as the hero and they see other people out there as the villain. People live in a very comic book, black and white, very simplistic worldview. And I don't agree with that. I don't agree with looking at the world that way. And so I kind of wanted to talk about how it is that people fall into that mindset, into that worldview, and how that affects the way that we act and how people are able to manipulate us with that understanding. So let's start with the us versus them mentality. When it comes to these particular kids, these social justice warriors, not just the ones in this video, but I think in general, I think this is a pretty accurate claim about people that fall into the social justice movement. I feel like they've been sold a worldview, and it's a worldview where they're the heroes and they're protecting the world from fascist right wingers. Very frequently in their rhetoric and in their claims, you hear them talking about death camps for trans people. Donald Trump is going to put all of the Mexicans in FEMA camps. And they talk about these type of things when it comes to using the proper pronouns and all of these different things, where some people on one side of the line see it as these people are enemies of free speech. These people are trying to force me and tell me what through hate crime legislation or through hate speech legislation, trying to tell me what I am allowed to and what I'm not allowed to, what I'm forced to say. I don't think that these kids see themselves as enemies of free speech, though. I think they see themselves as enemies of hate speech. And what they've been told that free speech will ultimately lead to, which is mass incarceration of minority and marginalized populations. And I think that the same thing goes for the alt-right or the anti-SJW crowd. They feel like they're protecting freedom of speech. They're not out to invalidate somebody's existence, or they're not out to, they don't want to, maybe some of them do. Some of them, I see this stuff about taking people on helicopter rides. But for the most part, I don't think that they want to put trans people in death camps. They just don't want to be, they don't want to be threatened to call a man a woman or have to ask somebody, what's your preferred pronoun, every time they initiate in a conversation with a stranger. And they don't want to be thrown in jail for refusing to do so. And so on both sides of the line, people see themselves as the heroes and they see the other people as the villains. And it's kind of crazy. And I see, having been involved with a lot of different political movements, I wasn't always so anti-activist the way that I am now. Back when I was a rambunctious, energy-driven teenager, I dumped a lot of energy, a lot of time, and a lot of money into different political movements. Political movements can have you spending your days marching or protesting, standing on a corner with a sign and trying to get your message out there. Also, they can take up your money by money bomb donations to your favorite talking head that's the mouthpiece of your movement, and suck up a lot of energy. And I see this on Facebook all the time. People just going back and forth with these 50 comment long threads where neither one of them makes the other budge an inch. In fact, both people just dig in with their heels even more so. and just a ton of energy wasted on both sides of the argument. Huge investments made by the true believers of these causes. And usually it ends up being all for naught. Usually there's nothing to show for this investment of time, energy, and money. Sometimes it ends up being that we're even in a worse predicament than when we started. And sometimes it's just a complete circle jerk of our time and our energy. And I feel like Occupy Wall Street is a great recent example of people just donating tons of time and energy and into something that really most of those people turned around and backed Hillary Clinton in this last election, who was like the most pro Wall Street candidate out there. So it just seems weird to me that they would dump all of this time and energy into something that went nowhere and then completely end up on the opposite side of the spectrum when it comes time to cast their vote. It's crazy, but for some reason or another, these people invest a lot of time, a lot of energy, and a lot of money. And I kind of wanted to examine why I believe that is, because I'm a greedy capitalist. And if people are investing energy, time, and money into something, I want to know why, so that I can get my hands on some of it. Just joking, or am I? Anyways, I think most of these people are well-meaning, if not well-meaning idiots. They're useful idiots. They're pawns. Sometimes they actually, I think probably 99% of the time, we are the 99%. 99% of the time, I think that they actually have good intentions. But the people at the top of these movements, I don't think maybe that they do. I think that they're getting a lot out of the useful idiots down below. And when I'm talking about the people at the top of these movements, I'm talking about people like George Soros, way at the top of these movements, funding and manipulating all of these different political movements, all the way down to people like educators in the college academia realm. People like George Soros, they get to affect political change. They get to gain more political control over the world. And people like your local professor at your local Ivy League college, they get to feel like puppet masters over their students. They get to influence the minds and the actions of the people that come to them and look up to them. And even if George Soros or even if these college professors actually believe in the cause that they're feeding to these well-meaning, useful idiots out there, even if they believe in the causes that they're promoting, power over minds, power over actions, power over people, especially large groups of people, it can become addictive. There's been studies that show that power to influence other people is as addictive as cocaine is. Yeah, I stumbled over that last sentence. So it's hard to assign or prescribe motives, but I do know that there have been studies that show that if you get power over people, it gives you a rush, a dopamine rush, and it can be even more addictive than getting money. So when you look at people like George Soros who just dump money into getting their way and maybe don't recoup all of it, but they get that political power. And when you look at like educators who don't get paid a huge amount of money, but they get to push their ideals out onto the world and they get to manipulate the minds of impressionable college students, that power over other people can be just as big, or if not a bigger incentive than an actual monetary payoff. And us in the freedom loving community, we're not really immune to this. In my opinion, I see some of the criticisms that are waged against us as actually being legitimate criticisms. I guess as far as like the black and the white, hero versus villain mentality, I think we fall victim to that as well. So I'm going to take a couple examples. We're going to look at, like, at the lower levels, liberty activists' response to police now, or our reactions to police. Now, we see police as like policy enforcers. We see them stealing money from people, violating people's rights, arresting people over victimless crimes. And while all of these things are valid assessments of what's going on, that's really only one side of the story. So it's really easy for us to say, oh, the police are the villains and we're the heroes, us in cop block and us policing the police. We're the heroes of this story. And it's really easy to join movements like cop block and film the police and believe that we're doing some good out there and that we're the heroes. And it's true that some police officers are just getting back. They were bullied in high school and now they want to be the bullies themselves. But on the other hand, though, that's a blanket statement. And I don't really believe that it applies to every single police officer out there. In fact, I know for a fact it doesn't, because I have a friend that's a police officer. I've a really close friend that's a police officer, and then a friend of the family that's a police officer. And the friend of the family, absolutely a bully. His dad was a cop. His dad was very abusive, and he grew up idolizing his dad and idolizing the power that his dad had. He ended up being a police officer. He's a dick. My other buddy, who's a police officer, works for Colorado Highway Patrol. He's one of the most honorable stand-up guys that I've ever met in my life. He's honest. He's just a good guy. He believes that he's out there helping people. And, he wants to help people. That's why he went into the job. He turned down a job at the city level because he felt like I felt that most of what they do at the city level is just extort people. And so he got a job for Colorado Highway Patrol, which basically all he does is respond to accidents, cleans up the mess, keeps more people from getting hurt, and helps victims of car crashes. So that's like 90% of what his job is. And he does it because he wants to help people. And while I don't agree with him on everything, while we don't see things eye to eye on a lot of things, he sees what drugs do to people. He sees what not wearing a seatbelt does to people in an accident. And so arresting a drug addict and helping that drug addict get sober for at least a couple of nights while he's in the local county jail, or ticketing somebody for not wearing their seatbelt, he actually sees that as him helping people. So he doesn't see the unintended consequences the way that I do. He doesn't see a more viable option for solving the problem. And so he enforces these laws, because he doesn't see them as victimless the way that I do. And, so we see things differently, but, and I feel like some of his actions do bad, and I feel like some of his actions do good. But he doesn't see himself as a bad guy. So he's able to rest easy at night, and he's not able to rest easy at night because he's evil. He's able, and because he's happy with, breaking up families or taking the last $50 that somebody has to their name out of their pocket for a seatbelt violation. He doesn't see himself as hurting people. He sees himself as helping people. He sees himself as a hero. And so, again, it's one of those things where in a black and white comic book version of the world, we would see him as a villain, but he doesn't see himself that way. So it's not that simple. Hitler, I hate referring to Hitler to make a point, but Hitler said that he could get people to do the most horrific things to other people merely by giving them praise and medals. And I would say that all governments exploit this knowledge with their militaries, with their police officers, to one degree or another. I don't think it was exclusive to the Nazi regime. Now, let's take this to a bit grander scale. Let's say that you're a titan of industry, or you're some bigwig politician in Washington, D.C. You're part of the class of people that we often refer to as the elite. You see how most people don't make good financial decisions. You see how most people end up living in poverty their whole life because they don't know how to make good financial decisions, or sometimes they just refuse to. You see people making bad health decisions. You see people making bad lifestyle decisions, and it leading to a lot of problems in their lives. You see people treating each other like crap. You see the petty stuff that people obsess over in their day-to-day lives. And because you're so successful and you're, you know, hovering over the masses, you start to feel like you're better than they are. You start to feel like you've elevated past the petty things that occupy the times and lives of most people out there. And you start to see them as beneath you, or as not being as competent as you. And so you start to feel obligated. Oh, well, I wouldn't have been put into this position of power if I wasn't meant to do something with this power. And so you start seeing yourself as entitled and obligated to make decisions that should be forced on the lives of other people, and to make decisions for the resources of the entire planet. And I mean, after all, you see the bigger picture. You're making, you know, multi-trillion dollar moves while the rest of humanity is arguing over what color some stupid dress on the internet is. So why shouldn't you have more responsibilities over what's going on the planet as a whole than the average person is? So you start meeting in secret with your friends and you start making plans, because the plebs out there wouldn't understand. They don't have a big enough picture view to know what's going on. So they couldn't possibly understand what needs to be done. So you have to make your plans in secret, and you're telling yourself you're doing this to save humanity from themselves. Are you doing this because you're a bad guy? No, you're doing it because you see yourself as a hero. You see yourself as a savior of humanity. But we, the conspiracy theorists out here, would look at you and be like, why are you meeting in secret? Why are you holding these Bilderberg meetings? Why are you meeting at the Bohemian Grove? Now, I'm not defending some of this stuff. I'm actually a little bit more conspiracy theory than probably most of you are. I do believe that there's some, at least a shred of truth to things like the Pizzagate conspiracy and spirit cooking. I think that there are psychopaths out there. I think that there are psychopaths in high positions of power. I'm just saying that I don't believe the world is as black and white as most of us see it. I feel like most of us see ourselves as the good guy, and this includes police officers. This includes social justice warriors. This includes politicians. This includes, well, a lot of politicians. This includes the corporate elite. I believe that a lot of them see themselves as the good guys. I think that there are truly evil people out there, truly manipulative people out there, and they can use that sense of heroism. They can use that sense of people self-identifying as the hero. And they can manipulate good people into doing horrible, horrible things, because that's what we all want. We all want to feel like we're the hero. We all want to feel like we're important, like we're making a difference in the world. And there are some people who just don't have a conscience. There are some people who are just wicked. And when those people get into positions of power, they can manipulate the good intentions of the majority of us out here into carrying out some very vile deeds. And I think that when you look back at history, when you look at how many people were mass murdered under communist regimes, those people were fighting for equality. When you look at the things that that happened under the National Socialist Party of Germany, those people were fighting for a better tomorrow. They really thought they were ridding the world of evil. When you look at what's going on the campuses these days with the social justice warriors, I think a lot of them feel like they're actually the heroes and that they're actually protecting humanity from some greater evil. And they're being manipulated into doing some pretty horrible things. The old saying is, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and I believe that that is absolutely true. I'm not a guru, I'm not an activist, I'm just an entrepreneur and an anarchist, trying to be a leader and deal with haters, man. This is my life, welcome to Nathan Frazier Land. And we're into another segment of the show. I'm so proud of myself. I finally got the bumpers for Nathan Frazier Land, Focus on Freedom, and the BYO Boss segment, anarchopreneur segment of the show done. That's what that was. I might go back and re-record them because I feel like they could be tweaked a little bit, but enough of that. That's one of the things that I got accomplished this week. I made 75 seconds worth of audio clips. Woohoo, what an accomplishment. Something else that I want to tell you about. I don't really have very much going on in Nathan Frazier Land right now, other than a pretty bad toothache that's just kicking my butt right now. But other than that, the other thing that I want to tell you about is I do have a webinar coming up. It's going to be all about how to nail the foundational, the fundamental elements of a profitable business. I feel like there's so many like bright, shiny objects. Get this application. Make sure that you buy this software. Make sure that you get this particular tool. It can all be a little bit overwhelming. There's so much different advice. So I wanted to do a webinar where I just go back to the basics of what makes a solid foundation for a business. If you get the foundation right, I feel like everybody wants to sell the decorations. They want to sell the vinyl siding and the decorative windows and the automatic garage door opener, and nobody's really talking about the fundamentals, the foundation that you build your house on. So I wanted to do a webinar basically focusing on the foundation, because if you build your house on quicksand, it doesn't matter how pretty it is, how many bright, shiny objects are decorating it, it's going to sink. And so I want to teach the foundations, and I'm doing that in a new webinar. If you want to sign up for that, go to freemarketsquad.com and sign up there. We'll be right back on the other side of the break. This is Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Frazier Show.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
You're a busy podcaster, not a web designer, but you know, without a professional website to send your guests and listeners to, your podcast will not get the attention it deserves. Having a great website is crucial to the success of your podcast, but it can also be a major headache, not to mention a drain on your wallet. You need a service that's easy to use, gives you a great website, and hosts your podcast files all in one place. You need BlastPod from Podcast Blastoff. Far from just another WordPress platform, BlastPod was built from the ground up by podcasters for podcasters. BlastPod is your all-in-one podcasting solution that gives you the ability to podcast like the pros. Sign up now and get access to your BlastPod website today. Putting the power of podcasting into the hands of the people. PodcastBlastoff.com.
Let me ask you something. Haven't you ever been tempted to just break the rules and finally
get back at my big faceless corporate bosses for making me feel so small and insignificant?
Look at this, Marge. $58 and all of it profit. I'm the smartest businessman in the world.
Government can print money, but it's the entrepreneurs who really make the money.
Why don't you guys just make your cars cleaner and nicer and try to be better to your customers so that you can compete with Handy Car's popularity in the marketplace?
Shut up and take my money.
And we're back. This is Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Frazier Show, the podcast that's all about how to be your own boss, both politically and professionally. I am your host with the hero complex, the high priest of propaganda, Nathan the frickin' Frazier. Welcome back to the show. In the first part of the show, we were talking about, or I was talking, I don't know why I say we. I was talking and you were listening, and I do appreciate you giving me an hour out of your day. I was talking about how making people feel like the hero, how feeding into people's hero complex, how feeding into people's sense of importance by making them feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves, that they're part of something important and historical, and they're on the forefront of a historical battle. How feeding into, everybody wants to feel that. And by feeding into that, You can exploit people for, you can get them to donate tons of time and energy into promoting your cause. You can also get them to donate tons of money into funding your political movement or funding your political campaign. I've seen this happen a lot. I'm not making a judgment as to whether it's good or not. I'm just pointing out that I've seen it work. And as you're going to hear later on in the show, I've actually used these principles myself when it comes to marketing. And so without any further ado, we're just going to jump in to the BYO Boss segment of this week's show. And we're going to talk about how the foundational knowledge that I laid in the first half of the show when it comes to political movements and how people are maybe manipulated, maybe persuaded, I would say probably more so manipulated, how that knowledge can actually be implemented into marketing. So like I said, this is going to be some Church of the Invisible Hand stuff. Take it or leave it. It might make you feel very uncomfortable. It might make you dislike me as a person, knowing that I am spreading this information. It might lead to nuclear war. I'm taking that risk by letting you know this, what I'm about to let you know right here in the next segment of Anarchopreneur. For my free market squad members out on the grind, you gotta be your own boss, can't just fall into line. You gotta have a free mind and hope for the future. You gotta be the free market Anarchopreneur. All right, so let's just jump right into it. I'm not going to make any defenses for this. I'm not going to try and persuade you to believe that this is okay to understand this stuff. I really don't care how you feel about it. I'm just putting it out there. This is how human beings work. If you want to see this as manipulative, go ahead. If you want to see this as working with rather than working against the way things are, that's kind of how I view it. But I also understand that this can be viewed as manipulative. And to be honest, this is some stuff that most marketers will not talk about. This is some stuff that is like highly guarded secrets within the marketing community. And for two reasons. Number one, we don't want you, the average person out there, knowing this stuff, because we don't want you having this much power, basically. And we don't want you thinking about us in the light of knowing that we understand this and we might be using it against you. And so I'm taking on a huge risk by spilling the beans on this stuff, but I'm going to, because I have enough respect for you as an individual. I think that you can take this and understand it. And I feel like you're smart enough to, if you're one of my listeners, you're smart enough to, and you probably have enough integrity to where you can spit out the fat and consume the meat. And I'm going to just trust you with that. So I'm just going to jump into this. This is the two main reasons why people buy. The two biggest reasons why people buy things are, number one, to solve a problem, and number two, to feel better about themselves. Now, if what you're selling isn't a direct solution to a problem, you better learn how what you're selling can make somebody feel better about themselves. If what you're selling can do both, solve a problem for people and make them feel better about themselves, that's a double plus good win right there. But most, if not all, copywriters out there, when they talk about how to construct your sales copy, they talk about how to address the problem and agitate the problem and bring your prospective customer, your reader, to the solution that you suggest. Almost all copywriting that's explained in how-to tutorials out there is about how to go after the buyers that are buying to solve a problem. And I don't see very much, at least not for like the mainstream people out there, I don't see very many people talk about how to make people feel better about themselves in your sales copy. And I think it's because it teeters on the line of manipulation. And saying that, getting that out there, I'm just going to jump right into it. I wanted to take some time to focus on the other need, the need to feel good about yourself, and how I have used that in my marketing. And at the risk of losing some fans, at the risk of losing some customers, but at the hope of helping you be a better person in selling what you're selling, and the hope of helping you better understand what's going on in some of the more deeper levels of marketing out there that doesn't really get talked about, I'm going to explore this issue. So what do I mean when I say that people buy for two reasons: to solve a problem or to feel better about themselves? And you need to know how to make people feel better about themselves in your marketing if you're not selling something that is a direct solution to a problem. So what I mean by that is, like, if you're selling high heels, if you're selling lipstick or lingerie, you're not selling high heels, lipstick, and lingerie. You're selling how sexy a girl will look and how valuable she'll seem to whoever it is that she's trying to attract. So you're not telling her, buy this lipstick. It's 3.5 inches in diameter and it weighs this much and it fits in your purse and it has a plastic cap and it's this tone of red. That's not what you're selling her. You're selling her, wear this lipstick and you'll look voluptuous. Is that a word? Voluptuous? I'm not sure. I screwed that up. You'll look sexy to whoever it is that you're trying to attract. You'll look valuable. You'll look like you're somebody who would be a good mate for whoever it is that you're trying to attract. That's what you're selling. When you're selling high heels, same thing. When you're selling lingerie, same thing. That's what you're selling. You're selling the idea that they'll appear more valuable to the opposite sex or the same sex, whatever floats your boat. I don't really care. And same thing, this isn't like an attack on, oh, look how easily manipulated women are by marketing. This is the same thing for men. When you're selling a sports car, you're not selling the sports car. When you're selling luxury watches, you're not selling luxury watches. What you're selling is how valuable you'll look, or the customer will look to the person that he's trying to attract. If you're selling a nice business suit, you're not selling 300 thread counts. You're not selling precision stitching. You're selling, when you walk into that job interview, you're going to look like you have your stuff together. Or when you walk into the courtroom, you're going to look like you have your stuff together. You're selling a sense of importance. You're selling a sense of value. That's what you're selling when you sell sports cars or business suits or luxury watches. So this is very much so for men, as just as much so as it is for women. And it goes down to a basic primal need, in my opinion. And that's basically that people want to feel important. People want to feel like their life has meaning, and people want to feel like other people value them. I don't know if this is something that goes back, if it's like epigenetic and it goes back to tribal times where, everybody in the community had to provide value. Otherwise, you know, the community starved or went extinct. So the elders were valuable because they had the knowledge, and the young men were valuable because they had the strength. They could hunt and they could go out and collect firewood. The young women were valuable because they had ovaries and they could bring new life into the tribe. They could keep the tribe going. And anybody who was one of these people, you know, a crippled person or a lady that wasn't able to have children, they were seen, if not by the tribe, but maybe by their own, you know, in their own eyes, they saw themselves as less valuable. And this still rings true through today. People are riddled with insecurities. Even the most attractive females that I've had relations with were riddled with insecurities. Even, you know, myself, people look up to me like I'm some freaking guru who has been able to accomplish, you know, I've owned two above ground businesses. I've owned a lot of other successful underground businesses. I've launched you know, multiple successful podcasts. I've been able to accomplish a lot with my short time on this earth. I'm riddled with insecurities. I'm always dealing with imposter syndrome. I'm always, you know, comparing myself to people that are way more successful than me and not feeling like I'm living up to my own potential. So everybody, even the most successful people, even the most attractive people, everybody is riddled with insecurities. Everybody hyper-focuses on the areas of their life where they don't feel very valuable. It's a common fear that we all have, that we're not as valuable as we should be. And a lot of times our buying decisions are based off of alleviating that fear, based off of trying to make ourselves either feel more valuable or at least, at the very least, appear more valuable. And maybe it's not just valuable, but people want to feel appreciated. I think that I was recently reading that like the biggest cause of divorce in America right now is because one of the two spouses doesn't feel appreciated enough by the other spouse. Being somebody who's not super proud to admit this, but have engaged in sexual intercourse with quite a few married women, I know firsthand that make a girl who doesn't feel appreciated at home, doesn't feel important to her spouse, just give her a tiny bit of attention and they'll do backflips onto the mattress for you. That's just the way it is. And maybe not all girls, hashtag not all women, but most people, they're just starving for appreciation. They're starving for attention. And if you give it to them, most people will bend over backwards to give you whatever you want in return. Now I should qualify that. I am doing my best not to engage with with married women these days, but it is something that has been something I've done in the past. And though I'm not proud of it, I'm willing to admit it. So there it is. Again, I told you this was going to be one of those episodes where you're probably not going to look at me the same afterwards, and I might lose some fans, and it wouldn't be a good episode of Anarchopreneur if I didn't lose some fans along the way. And here's the thing. Not just most people feel like they don't get enough appreciation. Most people don't give enough appreciation. If you've ever worked at any kind of like customer service or retail job, you know that customer complaints far outnumber customer compliments. People just assume that you should do the awesome customer service. And if they get it, they rarely go up and make a comment about it. But the one time that you're rude to a customer, or the one time you're not able to completely satisfy a customer's needs, they're real quick to run up to the customer service desk and leave a customer complaint about you. This is also true from bosses at work to a spouse at home. Most people in general don't give out nearly as many compliments as they give out complaints. And I'm just going to tell you this, a little bit of self-reflection. I bet you if you think about yourself right now, you'll probably realize that you don't give out as many compliments as you give out criticism. I know that this is something that I challenge myself to do, but I'm not perfect. I struggle. I catch myself complaining about stuff and make a conscious effort to try and give out compliments and show people, you know, if I appreciate something that somebody does, I try to make a conscious effort to let them know about it. But even myself, who consciously tries to go out of my way to make my compliment to complaint ratio, you know, tilt more towards the compliment side, I know that I'm not perfect. I know that I have days where I probably give out 10 complaints to every one compliment. That's just the way we are. Now, I don't think that we should just appeal to flattery. I don't think we should just be like, hey, Jane, that's a nice dress you're wearing today. How about you get to work? I'm not a fan of that. But if you're sincere about something that you appreciate, I think you should show it. If somebody does something and it made your day, let them know about it. Even if it's just like a thank you, just if you appreciate something, let people know that you appreciate it. Look for reasons to say thank you. Look for reasons to praise people. If somebody has something that you find valuable about them, let them know about it. And this has a couple of different I guess, effects or a couple of different reactions. First of all, people will enjoy being around you because you make them feel better about themselves. So they'll want to have you around more often. It also has the effect of making you more conscious of the things that you should be grateful for. It makes you more conscious of the things that you should appreciate. I'm not like a power of positive thinking type guru guy, but I do believe, you know, I try to at least one in the Free Market Squad Facebook group every week, I try to think of something that was awesome that happened throughout the week and post about it. Not to brag or boast or show off, but just to show appreciation. What you give your energy to grows. And if you're always giving your energy to things that you're complaining about, reasons to complain in your life are going to grow. But if you're always giving your energy to things that you should show appreciation for, things that you should show appreciation for in your life will grow. And then also, it just makes the world a better place. If more people are focusing their energy on the positive aspects of life, more people are paying attention to the positive aspects of life, it's just a better world to live in. It's a better environment to work in. It's a better family environment to live in. And so it naturally follows that if you do this and the people around you start doing it, it's going to be a better world for all of us to live in. Now I'm going to talk about something called the Benjamin Franklin effect. This is basically asking people to do something small for you and then showing them that you appreciate that, and it leads them to want to do more things for you. It's weird. It's one of those things where it's so counterintuitive, because people say, well, if you want somebody to do something for you, do something for them first. But Benjamin Franklin had a tactic where if he wanted somebody to do something for him, he asked them to do something for him first. So an example that they have is when he would have a debate with somebody, before the debate, you know, especially if it was like a heated political debate, he would ask them to borrow a book. He'd be like, hey, I heard that you have a good library. Can I possibly borrow this book? I really wanted to read it. I heard you have it. I know we're supposed to debate next week, but it'd just be really cool if I could read this book before we have the debate. Maybe it'll give me some insight into the way that you think, whatever, yada, yada, yada. He would read the book, he'd give it back to him, and he'd tell him, dude, that was awesome. I really enjoyed that book. Thank you so much. I don't think they used awesome back then, but thank you so much for letting me read that book. It meant a lot to me. And this would do a couple different things, but first and foremost, it would feed their own sense of self-importance. It would make them feel like they were important. It would make them feel like they had done something special for Benjamin Franklin, and that now he viewed them as somebody who was important. He viewed them as somebody who was valuable to him. So they would feel valuable to him. And now when they're going into the debate, they've got that weighing on the back of their mind. Well, Benjamin Franklin sees me as somebody of value. Or somebody of value. Do I really want to ruin this by just taking him to the woodshed in this debate? Will that diminish the way he perceives me? Because I'm off to a good foot with him. And even if I disagree with him, I feel like I'm valuable to him. Do I want to ruin that by being a complete dick in this debate? It's a weird effect, but it does have some pull on the way people act, the way that people think. If they feel valuable to you, they're afraid of ruining that. And so by simply asking them to do something for you and showing appreciation for it, it makes them feel valuable to you. And then also add in the effects of something called consistency bias. People want to appear consistent. If this is consistently bad or consistently good, if it's appearing consistent to you or appearing consistent to their own selves, people want to maintain a veil of consistency. Some people don't mind breaking their words, but they hate breaking their own moral compass. They hate being inconsistent with their actions. So if they believe themselves to be one thing, they're going to do whatever they can do to keep seeing themselves in that same light. If they believe that you see them as one thing, they're going to do whatever they can do to keep you seeing them as that one thing. People want to appear as consistent. So if you give them a small favor to do for you, like borrow you a book, and then later you ask them to do a larger request just to stay consistent, a lot of times they'll agree to the larger request that they wouldn't have agreed to in the first part, you know, initially, but because they agreed to the small favor first and now they want to appear consistent, they'll agree to the larger favor. It kind of falls into the realm of like the sunk cost fallacy, but that's a whole different show. I don't have the time to get into that, but that's kind of the consistency bias kind of falls into or borderlines on the sunk cost fallacy. So I'm going to give two examples of how the Benjamin Franklin effect and the effects of consistency bias, and I'm going to kind of harken back to the beginning of the show of letting people know or feeding into people's want to be the hero and feeding into people's want to feel important in my own business and certain things that I've experienced. So recently I was hired by an organization that's kind of an activist organization, and they wanted to increase support from people that they wanted to increase monetary support from people that were part or supporters of the organization. And so they hired me to write a series of ad campaigns for a pledge drive and basically a support drive where people could get involved and help monetarily, financially support this organization. And so the way that we did it, the way that the ads that I wrote were basically based off of, look, this is an important cause. And you believe that this cause is important. Otherwise, you wouldn't even be hearing this right now. And you are important to the continuation of this cause being able to thrive. And we acknowledge that. We acknowledge their sense of heroism by saying, in the past, your actions have been able to keep us going. Your actions have made this message get out, have made this cause able to do what it's been able to do. We acknowledge your actions, and we acknowledge that your actions have proven that this is important to you and you are important to it. Then we switch it and we say, if you want to prove in the future, you know, that this is important to you, and if you want to prove that you are important to it, this is how you can do it. You can become a supporting member of this particular cause, and you can make this particular amount of donations to this cause every month. And so we wrote an ad campaign, a series of advertisements based off of this approach, and monetary support for this particular cause went up 23% in the very first week and has continued to go up since we started running these advertisements, has continued to go up. And I think last time I checked, it's at above 30% of an increase in support from before when they hired me to the results that I brought them afterwards. And it basically was that appeal to people's wanting to be a hero, wanting to feel important, and acknowledging that they had already shown that they were important to this before, and giving them a way to remain consistent. And, we saw a 23% immediate increase in support. These same psychological things can be applied to landing pages too. A landing page is basically when somebody lands on a page on your website, you offer to give them something for free in exchange for their email. When they opt in, they prove that whatever it is that you're giving away, whatever it is that you offer, is important to them. They also prove that they trust you enough to give you their email. Now comes the time to give them the opportunity to remain consistent. You give them the opportunity to purchase a Tripwire product, something that's low cost, high value, but allows them to say, yes, this is important to me. And yes, I'm going to be consistent in showing you that this is important to me. So you buy this thing for $7 or $29.99, something very inexpensive. And, I liked what I got from the opt-in. I liked the experience that I got. I liked the fact that I feel like I'm working towards my own sense of importance by purchasing this. So I'm going to go ahead, or by opting in for your free thing. So I'm going to go ahead and purchase this. If I buy the Tripwire, then there's an upsell for $199. Am I going to prove that I'm serious about my desires? Am I going to prove that I'm serious about, what I want to accomplish, that I want to get what you have to offer? And am I going to prove that I'm consistent? It falls on a couple of different things. How did you make me feel along the way? Did you make me feel appreciated when I got that first opt-in? Did you say, hey, thank you? Did you make me feel appreciated? Did you make me feel like I was moving towards a goal that I wanted? Did you make me feel important? If you did. And then the same thing happened when I bought your Tripwire product. Did it make me feel better about myself? Did it make me feel like I was moving towards where I wanted to go? If it did, then when I get to that $199 purchase, I'm more than likely going to make that purchase as well. Benjamin Franklin effect and consistency bias can go a long way in helping your business. Be your own boss. Deuces.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
All right, Free Market Squad, before I'm out of here, I do want to call your attention back to the free webinar that I'm going to be hosting next Monday, January the 23rd. I want you to be there. It's limited to 100 people, so if you get signed up after the first 100 people, you will not be able to get in. So it's not my fault. That's just the way the webinar software is. I want to see you there, though. We're going to be going over the 7 foundational pieces that you have to have in place if you want your business to be successful. This is not the bells and whistles. This is not the bright, shiny objects. This is not the latest internet hack or SEO hack or Facebook ads hack. These are the foundational pieces. If you build your business based off of what hack is working today, as soon as that hack stops working, your business goes bye-bye. I don't want that to happen to you. I want you to build your business on a solid foundation. This webinar will give you that solid foundation. Make sure that you're signed up and that you're there next Monday. To sign up, go to freemarketsquad.com. The very top thing on the website there is a link to sign up for that webinar. Go there, check it out, sign up, and I will see you next Monday on the exclusive free webinar for Free Market Squad members, the 7 basic building blocks of any booming business. All right, Free Market Squad, I am out of here. Faith in each other, not in authority. Be your own boss. Hashtag BYO boss. Catch you on the flip side. Deuces.